This is Bob Lapine. I want to say thanks for downloading and listening to Family Life Today as a podcast. As you probably know, we are a donor-supported ministry, which means that the reason you're able to listen to this podcast is because some have given financially to support Family Life Today. As you listen, would you reflect on how this podcast is ministering to you and then consider making a donation to help keep the podcast available? You can donate at familylifetoday.com/donate. Thanks for doing what you can do, and we hope you enjoy the podcast. Are you one of those people who would say, you know, my prayer life could be better than it is? Paul Miller has a spiritual diagnosis for you.
The problem with prayerlessness is not self-discipline, which most people think. If I were more spiritual, the key to having a praying life is having a permanent sense of a poverty of spirit, that I can't do life on my own.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. We'll hear today how you can cultivate a deeper relationship with God through prayer. Stay tuned. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. I don't know how many people you have challenged over the years. Well, several hundred thousand if you count the radio program, but I'm talking about face-to-face, hand-to-hand, eye-to-eye. You've challenged a lot of men over the years to pray daily with their wives, mm-hmm. discipline that you and Barbara have practiced in your own marriage, right?
Right.
If I read the statistics right, I think among Christians it's about 2% who do something like that?
Yeah, we surveyed about 100,000 people in the church. We're not talking about those who don't go to church and who don't claim any kind of relationship with God. But we found that about 70% of us pray for our children, 35% of us pray with our children, 10% of couples pray together outside of a meal, and less than 2%, probably closer to 1% or less, as a couple, pray together every day.
I wonder, and maybe our guest knows, I wonder if there's any data on how many followers of Christ just pray on their own on a daily basis or more than that.
Let me introduce our guest then and let him answer the question. Paul Miller joins us again on Family Life Today. Paul, welcome back.
It's great to be here.
Paul is, he's a prayer warrior, and he trains prayer warriors. Actually, he trains... what'd you call it? Badly praying Christians?
That's right. We prefer the ones who have given up on prayer.
That's your target audience.
Yeah, that's our target audience. And it's the broad middle of the market.
he has written a book called A Praying Life. So back to Bob's question, how would you answer that?
I would say from our prayer seminars, we've probably done about 70 of them, and there's questions. We do them very interactively. And I would say about 10% of people have a regular of Christians actively going to church have a regular, consistent prayer life.
And are you defining that? I mean, I do the arrow prayers, the bullet prayers. You know,
I'm not talking about that. I mean, people who are have some kind of written form of praying. They're following up on. They're thinking about their prayers. They're not just sort of. And these people are also meandering their way through the day praying. But the people who are really thoughtful about praying.
And that would not be me. Okay. I'd be in that camp of 90% who aren't like that.
Right.
Should I be like that?
You mean thoughtfully praying? Yeah, we'd love you to be there.
I would say
Bob thoughtfully prays. He's just saying he's not going to have that regimented journal approach. That's what sounds like.
I don't have a prayer list. I don't have a prayer closet. I don't have a prayer chair. I don't have a time every day that's my prayer time.
Well, let me give you a quick story on that from Jesus' life. In Mark 1, the gospel writers describe Jesus' first day of public ministry. And he begins the day in the synagogue. It's in all the Jesus films. And the demon-possessed man cries out in the synagogue, and Jesus casts out the demon. And then he goes home to Peter's house and heals Peter's mother-in-law there. And word spreads through the whole town of Capernaum on this, the casting out the demon and the healing. But it's Sabbath, so no one can do anything. They can't be healed on the Sabbath, and you can only walk so far. And then Mark describes this beautiful scene outside Peter's door that night, that as soon as the sun sets, the whole town gathers at the door, and Jesus heals far into the night. And then the next morning, Jesus is up before the sun is up, and he's off praying. And he's praying long enough that the crowd regathers, and Peter discovers him probably a couple hours later. And one of the things I love to ask people is just, you know, if the Son of God has to have a regular prayer time.
Okay.
Sorry, Bob.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to compare you to Jesus.
Well, but I think, again, you're talking to most of us, right?
Yeah. Oh, I am. It's 90, and I'm talking of people going to church regularly. Actually, it would be a cut above, because people are coming to our prayer seminars who are the pew sitter.
And I have to tell you that I think one of the reasons why I gravitate away from that instead of toward that is because somewhere in the back of my mind, I think that acting and doing is more important or more effective than praying. Now, I know as soon as I say it.
You're talking about the task.
I'm talking about getting after it and getting something done.
I am convinced that America is the hardest place in the world to pray. Because when you sit down to pray, you aren't getting anything done that you can see. Your mind is wandering. You're doing it badly. And there's nothing like a prayer time to make you realize how unspiritual you are.
Right.
So why should you have an activity that tells you that you're a spiritual idiot?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So the answer to that is?
Stop it. You know? Right. That's what most people do. Let me go back to Jesus in his prayer time. The difference between us and Jesus is that Jesus is the most dependent human being who ever lived. He can't do life on his own.
Right.
How do we know that? He says it all through John. He says, I do nothing on my own. This is John 5:19. I do just what I see my Father doing. John 12, my Father tells me what to say, how to say it. His brothers come to him in John 7 and say, hey, they kind of give him a marketing 101 lesson and say, you know, let's go up to Jerusalem. And Jesus says, you can do whatever you want, but I can't. I mean, here's someone who's the most dependent human being. So prayer for him is life. Hmm. Does that help?
It does. Keep talking. I just need the regular reinforcement of what we're talking about.
Yeah,
here.
I do. I think something you talk about in the book would be helpful at this point. You describe prayer as something similar to having dinner.
Right.
Explain what you mean by a dinner party.
Yeah, because I understand that. Dinner, and I do that regularly.
What I'm trying to do there is to try to describe the end game. I'm not trying to frustrate people by telling them that prayer is like a feast. What I do is say prayer is like the biblical analogy is feast or dinner party. But think of a couple of old friends or new friends, people you just love being with. You know, maybe, you know, for Jill and I, it's really our grown kids. You know, we've been through so much together. We love one another. You don't need any agenda. We can sit around at a campfire for 2-3 hours and not repeat ourselves. Or, you know, it just, we love it. And the reason I describe, I say that is that's what good prayer feels like. It feels like a dinner with old friends. And I say that not to frustrate people, but just to let people have a goal out there that this really is, can be one of the most delightful things you do.
It's an intimate invitation.
Yes, it is.
To really, and I don't mean this irreverently, but to sup.
Yeah.
Have fellowship.
Yes.
And beverage and food and feast.
Yeah.
With the Lord God Almighty,
the
creator of the universe.
Yeah. Now, let me join you, Bob, in this prayerlessness, okay, so you don't feel like you're alone.
Thank you.
And make a difference. This was 2.5 years ago. One of Kim's struggles is she would get up like at 4:30 in the morning.
This is your daughter, who is she's mute
And she's autistic. And one of the things that autistic kids will do, sometimes the big word they use is perseverate. She'll do something again and again. And she would run out in the hallway, and at 4:30 at night up on the third floor, Jill and I sleep on the second floor, and she would flip the light on, run back to bed, stay in bed for 5 minutes, and then run back to the hallway and flip it off. And she would do that for like an hour. I mean, I could sleep through this. Jill couldn't. So Jill would tell her to get back in bed. And because there were three doors separating us from Kim in one floor, she had to tell her loudly, which sounds a lot like yelling. So Jill would yell at Kim, and it really wouldn't do much good, but it was just so simple. Like, Kim, get back in bed. We call it the yelling approach to life. And then it would even get more exciting when Jill and I would pray separately in the morning. She would go downstairs and have her devotions on the first floor, and I'd be on the second floor, and Kim would be pacing on the third floor. And now Jill's problem, she could hear the pacing, and I'd tune it out. I wouldn't even know she was doing it. So Jill would have to yell at me, so I would yell at Kim. So here you've got Kim pacing, Jill yelling at me, to me yell. And sometimes I would do like a preemptive strike. I'd sort of hear the pacing, oh, I need to yell at Kim, and then Jill would yell at me at the same time. And Bob, this 2.5 years ago, I'd probably done about 50 prayer seminars at that point. So I'm doing prayer seminars, yelling at Kim while I'm praying. Okay, so does that make you feel better?
That helps a little bit.
And 2 years ago, last December, like 4:45 in the morning, Kim starts pacing, and I started to get up out of bed, because I'd been convicted that I should pray with Kim. So Jill says to me, Paul, what are you going to do? You're going to go yell at Kim? And I said, no, I'm going to go pray with her, because yelling hasn't worked for 10 years. And she started laughing. She says, what do you mean 10 years? It's been 20 years. And I went up. So I keep discovering areas of my life that I've been completely prayerless like this. But
right.
I go up, and I put my hands on Kim, just sat down next to her on the bed, and she was kind of trembling. And I just prayed for her that God would just quiet her. And as soon as I started praying for her, I knew something that I hadn't known before. It was just so clear. I knew that I had underestimated Kim's ability to pray on her own and to own her own behavior. And 2 years and 4 months, I have not forgotten that. And it's led to Kim and I having a longer prayer time, a separate prayer time every morning. Kim has started to tell people she's praying for them. She's starting to pray more in the middle of her anger meltdowns. And it's kind of neat to see what God's done with that. And then on the other track, about 4 months after I started praying for Kim in the morning, dragging myself out of bed and going up to the third floor, her running completely stopped. It completely stopped, and she's never done it again.
Now, were you praying that she'd stop running?
Yeah, I went upstairs and I prayed with her. I should have been clear. I said, pray, God, calm her, help her not to run, Not very complicated, Just praying what I wanted. And it's completely stopped. And it stopped because we moved. And what we hadn't known was there was a factory across the street, and the diesel trucks would start up and awaken her. And here's the mystery of prayer, and this is where you have to watch cynicism. We were already planning that move. We already had an agreement of sale on our house already prior to that prayer. And the cynical person would say, you didn't need to pray. It would have happened anyway. And I would say, I have to be like a little child, and I just have to go to my Father with what I see. You can't reverse engineer prayer. You just have to be like a little child.
What's true of my life is when I'm praying the least is I'm absorbing responsibility myself.
Yes.
The most.
That's the great way to describe it.
And
yep.
And I'm just amazed at how my arrogance and pride and it shows up in so many different ways, whether it's you as a parent, whether you with your spouse, whether it's at work.
Yeah.
Whether with friendships, extended family relationships. I mean, I'm just amazed. I should have gotten it by now. I've been alive for 6 decades, for goodness sakes. I should have gotten the idea I don't possess the ability to fix things like I wish I could, but there is one in life who is worthy to take these requests to.
Dennis, that nails the problem with prayer. The problem with prayerlessness is not self-discipline, which most people think, if I were more spiritual. The key to learn having a praying life is having a permanent sense of a poverty of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That I can't do life on my own. Life is too big for me. I remembered, and I actually looked up in my journal, I found the day in the early 90s when after 17 years of parenting, I wrote down, it was half to me, half to God, I simply must pray for every one of my kids by thoughtfully and by name every day or they will kill one another. You know, it was no deep spiritual insight. It was just I now realized how the world worked.
They're barbarians, and if I don't pray for them, God may never invade their soul and rescue them from themselves.
Right. They were barbarians and they were coming over the wall. And that's why things like the gift to Kim in our home, and by the way, I don't mean gift gritting teeth, oh, we needed this. I mean, I am honored by Kim. I mean, she blesses me. I mean, she's my delight. Hmm. I mean, she's my crown.
You know, as I first came across a copy of your book and started reading it, it was right about the same time that in the cycle of teaching at church, I was teaching through Luke 11, the very beginning of the chapter where right. we see the abbreviated version of Jesus' pattern for prayer. And the thing that struck me over and over again as I was meditating on that and preaching through it, every line of that prayer is an acknowledgement of our dependence.
That's right.
In every area of our life.
Right.
So what is Jesus wanting us to do in prayer? It was just clear. Continue to acknowledge your dependence because on a daily basis, we forget how dependent we are.
Right.
And we think, like Dennis was talking about, we're self-sufficient. I can handle this.
Right.
I can absorb the weight instead of God doing it.
Yeah, here's a quick story. Kim, because of her problems with motor planning and it just hard for her to do things physically. So about 5 years ago, we started in the morning, Kim pouring milk into her glass. And it gets really scary because the milk goes all over the table. So I'm sitting there praying while she's pouring. Kim's weakness forces me to pray.
So you're praying, Lord, help her hit the glass?
Is that what? It's not really complicated. Lord, help her to get it in the glass. And she's getting – and for the last 4 years when this would happen, Jill, who loves things pretty neat, was a great sense of humor, but she would leave the kitchen.
Yes.
I mean, it was just too scary.
Uh-huh.
I mean, milk would be all over the place. You know, so we'd pray before it. We'd pray during it. You know, it just – so that the gift of this weakness right at the heart of our home forced us into a praying life. You really either get angry or cynical or you become praying.
Yeah, I have to ask you about that because that visual – of that milk coming out of the carton into the glass.
Well, it was more on the table
year. Okay, more on the table. And you praying, help me understand how you processed this. When Kim completely missed the glass and splattered it all over the table after you had been praying for 6 months for her to hit the glass. How did you process that? At that point, did you have the thought, Lord, I'm a child. Did you just not hear what I ask you?
How do your children, when they're younger, Dennis, because that's what Jesus says we need to be like in the kingdom, how do they process you saying no to something when they want something?
Or they pitch a fit.
They pitch a fit. And, I mean, just no, do they quietly say, oh, you know, but I mean, don't they come back by, you know, 500 times?
Dad.
Yeah, I mean, they sure. pester you.
Sure.
Jesus has become like a little child. Keep pestering. Jesus tells us to pester all the time. I mean, he's got two whole stories on it. There's the story of the unjust judge with the widow.
Oh, yeah. First sister.
I mean, it's a great.
I like that story.
Finally, this judge is awful. The only reason he does it, he looks at, I could fix this problem, or this woman is going to torture me for the rest of my life. And you know what? He said, you know what? Let's stop the torture. And so he does it. Jesus tells stories about parables about adults who act like pestering kids in order to encourage us to pray.
Okay,
so tell
the truth. When you have to clean up the milk, uh-huh. You're going to be late for an appointment. Do you ever get a little ticked?
Oh yeah,
at God.
Yeah,
for not answering your prayer like you wish it would have been answered.
Yeah, but that's part of the whole thing of the story of what God's doing in the story. He's drawing his best gift to me is drawing me into the life of his son Jesus. He wants my life, and I'm just paraphrasing Philippians 2. He wants my life to look like his son. Have this mind in you, which was in Christ Jesus. So permitting suffering in my life continues to expose my pride and my self-will.
We talked earlier about how your daughter, Ashley, had prayed for years for her sister, Kim, to speak.
Yeah.
And God didn't grant that request to Ashley.
At that time, I mean, Kim, since then, let me give you one way that God answered that prayer request, and he's still doing it in different ways now. We had gotten a speech computer for Kim when she was about 12 years old, and they're wicked hard to learn, especially with her problems with fine motor and motor planning. She had no sentence structure. We tried a little bit, and it just sat on the shelf for 3 years. And I wanted to write a book about Jesus. This was in 96. And I went to pray about this. I thought it was a good time that year. And I thought, you know, I just went to pray. And this doesn't happen very often, but this thought came to me when I prayed, you know, I'd like to write this book on Jesus. And specifically, I really believe it was God speaking to me. How can you speak about me when Kim doesn't speak? I was immediately convicted of that. In other words, how can you write, Paul, a book about love when there's an area of love in your life that's missing? And I immediately it was a specific challenge from God to my integrity. And I put aside plans to write the book on Jesus, which it never would have worked out anyway at that time. And I prayed, God, how do I teach Kim how to do this? And about 3 weeks later, we got a flyer in the mail, and there was a speech computer camp in New Jersey where I knew the woman who was doing it. And I thought, hey, you know, we can do this. And we went to that speech computer camp, and it was a hard place to be. All these kids with all these disabilities, just kind of a shock to me. I was used to Kim, but not all these other kids. And I learned all kinds of things about how to help Kim. We opened up what they call in the special ed world her IEP in the fall. She began to have a daily lesson on speech. And slowly over a period of about 8 years, Kim learned how to be fluent. And Kim speaks really well. She's very articulate. You guys heard her at lunchtime.
So does Ashley look at that today and say, God did answer my prayer?
I'd have to ask Ashley. The neat thing is she's also starting to use her voice. God led us to a speech therapist in Manhattan who helped train Kim with what they call motor planning. Like you have to learn how to breathe. Like Kim couldn't even breathe like a straight breath for 10 seconds, which you need for a sentence. She couldn't hold her jaw steady. Jill did this, and she still does speech therapy every day with Kim, and she's really getting so you can start hearing her. We call it her God voice. And in fact, probably maybe 2 years ago, she said her first words, which was, shut up, which now she's gotten really good at.
And Kim is how old?
28.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I'm just looking at your book here, and I'm thinking of the 90% who really don't practice a vital prayer life.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking this would make a great gift for any follower of Christ to begin to go through, and maybe for a husband and a wife who are just starting out their marriage together.
Or really at any stage in your marriage, whether you're in the midst of raising kids, whether you've got the empty nest, wherever you are. I think you're onto something here. I think this is a book that couples should go through together, or you should go through with other Christians for the accountability that it provides and for the interaction that I think will be healthy as you read through these chapters and as you talk about it. The book is called A Praying Life. It's by Paul Miller, and you can find a copy in our Family Life Today Resource Center. Go online at familylifetoday.com, and you'll find information on how you can get a copy of Paul's book. There are other resources there about prayer, about husbands and wives praying together, your devotional books for husbands and wives, Moments Together for Couples, and Moments with You. We have those books in our Family Life Today Resource Center as well. Go online at familylifetoday.com for more information about any of these resources or order by phone at 1-800-FL-TODAY, 1-800-358-6329. It's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And we hope you'll be back with us tomorrow when we're going to talk more about prayer. Paul Miller is going to be here. Hope to see you here again as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back tomorrow for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.
Scenes from a Grocery Store, number 15.
This one is 0.3 cents more expensive per ounce than that one. We gotta get this one.
Oh, do you remember what Thursday night used to be?
It
used to be our date night.
Huh. Oh, yeah.
When did it become grocery night?
Well, we're together, aren't we?
Talking about 0.3 cents.
Well, it's actually 0.3 cents, babe. And if you amortize that over the course of the year, we're saving $2. Come on.
That is not a date.
Could you use a real date night? Get away, just the two of you, to Family Life's Weekend to Remember Marriage Conference. You'll learn new ways to communicate, you'll have plenty of time to talk about things that really matter, and you'll spend Saturday evening at a romantic date rather than at the grocery store. Find out more at familylifeweekend.com.
Oh, this is taking forever.
Okay, well, you take that half of the store, I'll take this half. Let's meet back in Frozen, okay?
I thought we were already there.
familylifeweekend.com.